This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can he close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? Yes, you are. You're absolutely that exceptional American. So welcome aboard. A lot of things going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. Will you please visit our website, a21r.com, or you can take the long route, agenda21radio.news, a21r.com. And also newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com, and lots of things happening in New California. And, we had the opportunity the other day. I just sort of get down with this. We're going to be talking about a whole lot of things here on Agenda 21 Radio in the next couple hours. And so we invite you to call in. This will be after we have a special presentation here from the Epoch Times. The information that we're going to give you, of course, is my interview that I had with American thought leaders. I'll just play it. I want to get on with it because I think it's very, very pertinent. And you can go to the newcaliforniastate.com website and get the complete transcript and everything that came from this interview by the Epoch Times. And I've got to tell you, it was very interesting to go through the interview process with them. I really do appreciate the fact that we had the opportunity to have this little chat about New California, what goes on with New California, and how it, of course, is going to be so significant in the future. And the reporter was brought in from New York just to interview me. What does that say? I don't know. But it was very good to basically get this out on record, and we've had a lot of positive things for New California coming our way since this. And it's sort of a big Easter present, if you will, for everybody. So we're going to play this interview now. If you haven't heard it, it is up on Agenda 21 Radio and also the newcaliforniastate.com website. You can see it. Okay, so here we go.
What exactly is the New California movement?
And what are the grievances it's trying to address?
And how does this highlight the urban and rural divide among voters in California? Are there precedents for forming a new state out of a pre-existing one? And how is the New California Movement relying on the U.S. Constitution to achieve this?
This is American Thought Leaders, and I'm Yanya Kellick.
Today we sit down with Paul Preston, founder and president of the Movement for a New California State. We discuss how realistic the New California Movement actually is, why God would be reintroduced into the preamble of the new state constitution, and how the Reynolds v. Sims 1964 Supreme Court decision undermined the U.S. lowercase r Republican model of governance, leading to the challenges facing many Californians today.
Paul Preston, wonderful to have you on American Thought Leaders.
Thank you for having me.
So, Paul, you're the founder and president of the Movement for a New California State. And this might sound kind of outrageous to many of our viewers.
Right.
Can you tell me what this is all about?
Well, we're actually forming a new state from California. We're in the process of forming a new state from a pre-existing state and following the Constitution. Constitution and Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights provides for us to form a new state when the citizens feel compelled to. And so right now, with there's obviously a lot of things going on in California and have been going on in California. There's great unrest with Californians. And we've managed to pull it together over the course of last several years, probably 8 years, to actually get a cohesive state movement together. And there's been a number of other programs. You probably heard about six state, three state, that sort of thing. None of them were constitutional. They didn't pass constitutional muster. And our state movement has passed constitutional muster. We've seen all of our opposition fall off, basically, with their attempts at forming new states because they weren't following the Constitution. So we've adhered to the Constitution, and we're in the process of forming the 51st state.
So California is economically the largest state in America.
Right.
I've read that it's probably, if it were alone, it would be the fifth largest economy in the world. Why is it that you want to break that up?
Well, the economy is not working for most Californians. It's working for very few at the top. That's really what it's coming down to. The middle class has been squeezed out by overtaxation, overregulation. That's been a process that's been going on in California for really the last 25 years. And so now we're at the point where we just really have an elite upper class and a very poor middle or lower class, if you'd say lower class. We have the highest poverty rate of any state. Our homelessness situation is just off the hook. And both major places like San Francisco and really all throughout the state, when you travel the state like I have, I've been to all 58 counties. Poverty really is everywhere, and it's really unfortunate. But so our system and how economically is very much broken. And right now, at this point in time in our state's history, there's, like I said, there's great turmoil. Part of that has been derived from the California's Constitution. And the Constitution that we're technically working under, which is the playbook, you know, how is the state going to be run? The Constitution is your playbook. If you do sports, you have a playbook that you follow. And the Constitution has been amended in this state since 1879 more than 30-plus times. Through propositions and things like that. And that's really had a detrimental effect upon the actual function and the basis for why they had the Constitution. And one of the things that they brought in starting in 1966 was a full-time legislature.
Oh, right.
Now, when you start to think about that, what could possibly go wrong in a state with a full-time legislature? Which means that you have created an enormous bureaucracy, and that enormous bureaucracy has to do something. So what they do is they create laws. That's basically what they're there for. So in 1966, they brought in the professional legislature, which meant that the legislature was going to meet 11 months out of the year. Now, prior to that, our legislature, like in the state of Texas, because we had similar constitutions at the time, we were only meeting once every 2 years as a legislature. But the boom, the explosion of the bureaucracy and the bureaucratic monster, if you will, that we have today, started back then. And that kind of folded into another problem, and that was a court decision called Reynolds versus Sims from 1964 that took effect in 1967. So by 1967, when Ronald Reagan was governor for the first year, because he was elected in 1966, we had this confluence and coming together of the Reynolds versus Sims decision and then also the situation going on with the full-time legislature. And so really we created this monster of bureaucracy that we have today. So that's why the legislature can meet at will today in our term, in our modern day, 2019. And pass a bill within a matter of a couple of days. And they're passing bill after bill after bill after bill. There was over 2,300 bills that were introduced just this legislative cycle, and they predict that there's going to be about 1,500 of those are going to be passed. That's just outrageous. And, of course, when they're passed, you get the regulations, you get the fees, you get all the additional taxes, anything that goes with the bill, and then you get a bloated bureaucracy, which takes energy and it takes money away from the private sector. So that's why businesses are fleeing California. And as we sit here in this room, I look around at the businesses and the signs that are up for lease around this area, beautiful area of California, but it's that way throughout most of California. Businesses cannot stand up to the high taxes, the high regulations and fees that are going on coming from Sacramento. So basically, as we view it in New California, combine that with education, combine that with other parts of the economy, the overregulation, transportation, infrastructure, we take a look at California as a failed state at this point. And that's when we got together and said, there's got to be an answer to this. A lot of us 10 years ago were saying, there's got to be a solution as to how we can make this change. And we looked at it and said, well, we'll pass a constitutional, you know, proposition. And it's, everybody said, well, they've been doing that and ruining basically California through the propositions. What can we do? And he said, well, the only thing that we really possibly can do is to take a look at forming a new state. And what would that look like? And as we started to look at it more and more, it made a lot more sense to form a new state from a pre-existing state. And we, because of the attempts at trying to derail Reynolds versus Sims, it really looked like the only possible way we could do it successfully is by forming a new state. So we looked at that and said, okay, how can we do that? We looked at the tools which we had, which was the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights. The tools were there. The Founding Fathers put those tools in place for moments like this when a state was in the process of failing. And right now, economically, the economic trajectory for California is it's going to run out of money. It's at that point where Margaret Thatcher says, you know, the state California government is running out of other people's money, and that's going to happen much sooner than people think. And, you know, the reports we get from the field is that there's a lot of, I guess you'd say, people not being paid by the state right now as we speak. So that's called an indicator or a clue that of the economic disadvantages that are going on from the state. They're not paying their bills. But the other part of it is, of course, what's going society in general. And when you start taking a look at the overregulation, you start looking at what's going on with crime. And crime in California, regardless of what you're hearing from the state, which you look at the things from the state that come out and you research and you find out it's not really accurate. They basically are trying to cover up a lot of the crime statistics, but crime is growing. And then we're finding out that a lot of the legislative packages include packages that are really kind of benefiting the criminal. So when you start taking a look at that, you realize that's failing. So, you know, our response is, well, we need a new constitution, period. We think that a fresh look at a new state, as the constitutional provides, is really the only option that we have left.
When I was learning about the New California Movement, the thing that really struck me was how it's this kind of a rural interior versus coastal urban divide.
Right.
If you can kind of unpackage that for me a little bit, that would be helpful. And am I right?
No, you're absolutely right. And that's the core of what we're doing. I mean, there's many core pieces of what we're doing, but this is actually the heart and soul, really, of what we're doing. Because in the problems that we have all throughout the nation is you're having a centralization of power that's taking place right within the states themselves. But in Reynolds versus Sims, they decided that counties being represented under the little federal model by senators would be best served if they were representing people only. So in other words, rather than representing a county or the resources or the schools or the economy or everything that has to do with a county and the sovereignty of a county, they looked at it as a population grab. So in other words, senators should have an equal number of people that they represent, and that way they can rule better. that was the thinking. And they didn't touch the federal model, which called for two senators per state, because the founders wanted states to have an equal balance of power when they got into the legislature as a bicameral. And in California, at the time that California was founded, they came up with a formula for 80 assembly members and 40 senators, primarily because we had about 40 counties at the time, so everybody got a senator. And when Reynolds versus Sims came along, they did away with that. They said that one person, one vote, that was their mantra. And so what they did is they divided up the senators in the states by districts, and they gave them numerous counties to represent, and they had a population they had to represent first. Well, you got to think about that, because population was already being represented by the assembly or by the House of Representatives, whatever their state is. They represented the people. So now what you did is you gave the House of Representatives really more humans to be there to represent people as the senators. We have one senator here, and actually it's multiple counties that he represents. One senator in Senate District 1 represents 11 counties in California. And then down, if you go down to San Diego up to Los Angeles, you have 22 senators in just three counties.
So the power in the Senate basically became concentrated in these very urbanized.
Right. And what it's become in most states of the United States is now you have a unicameral legislature. You really don't have the differences in the power sharing that were inherent in a bicameral legislature that had equal power with the senators representing counties, which represented all the resource, all the commerce, all the things that go into counties. You did away with that. And so that's what's collapsed the system into power spots, centralized governance in the states. In California, you've got Los Angeles, you've got San Francisco and Sacramento. Those are the three power places. If you take a look at New York and Manhattan and upstate, it's all concentrated in Manhattan because all the senators represent people in Manhattan, not in the counties and the counties that are out there in upstate New York. If you take a look at Illinois, Chicago, as is the most populous, Cook County in Chicago is the most populous state. So it has all the resources, and all the rural areas of Chicago don't have those resources, and they're fighting. They've actually started a new Illinois movement based upon our model, because in our model we restore the one senator for one county situation. We bring that back, and I'll talk about that in a second.
You're actually challenging Reynolds versus Sims.
Absolutely. And there's a unique way.
And that's not just for California. It's for
other states, right? Yeah, and there's numerous movements that have now developed that people are calling us and using us as a resource. New Illinois is really the one that's the most furthest along. They actually have a resolution before their state assembly right now that they're bringing out. Then you have New Hawaii. They want to join. We actually had New Nevada actually did declare independence, and they're working on getting their counties together. New Oregon and New Washington have shown interest, and they want to be a part of this. So it's growing is what's happening. And there is a new New York group of people, too.
You know, aside from, staging a coup or something like that, it doesn't sound like that's anything like what you're planning to do.
No.
It sounds like you're planning to, use the rules and the Constitution and legislative approaches to do this. It seems like you would actually need the California legislature to pass legislation to allow this to happen. So forgive me for being skeptical, but I don't see that happening.
No. Well, it will, And they're in an impossible situation. We understand that. And we're basically here to help them more than hurt them or to bury them or something like that. But the economy for California is tumbling so far out of control, they need help, and we understand that. But with the Reynolds versus Sims decision and going in conflict with a big federal model that was put down to the little federal model, we do have that opportunity because we are following the Constitution. I want to speak about that for a second because this is really important that we follow the Constitution in New California and that we also have declared that we are going to be a part of the United States and be under the auspices of the United States Constitution, and we will follow those laws, as opposed to other movements that haven't done that. And, of course, that's where you get into things like coup. You know, you mentioned coups because when you start to listen to some of the voices of leadership in those groups, they're really talking about coups because they're not talking about using the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution as the tool to form a new state. And that's where the Founding Fathers knew there would be moments like this. If you have a tyrant in a given state as a governor, you have tyranny that's washed, the people can do something about it. So what the Constitution calls for in Article 4, Section 3, is that the people can form a state from a pre-existing state by directly going at the legislature and dealing with the legislature concerned. So we have an opportunity as citizens to not appeal to our state representatives in our own districts per se, but as a whole group of counties, which we have represented, we don't work with the governor. The governor is irrelevant in the process, and the executive branch is irrelevant in the process, and the courts are irrelevant in the process of getting approval, seeking approval of the state legislature. So that is our goal, is that we will be working with, hands-on, with the state legislature as citizens from the counties concerned. And that's how we will get approval. And it's a resolution that has to be passed in the Assembly and also in the Senate. And we think that the circumstances are coming together quite nicely right now for those events to take place. And they're taking place right now. We've already had some discussions with state legislators. We're not dealing with government agencies or even at the county level because they're irrelevant in the process. We want to get their support ultimately. And that's what we want, is their support, but we're not going to go actively after it. And the reason being is that they're part of the problem. You know, the Founding Fathers don't want us to work with the problem makers if you're forming a new state, you know, because you want to be free from that. And your opportunity to do so is to work directly with the legislators concerned. After that, we go to the Congress. We'll get approval, and I'll explain that in a second. But then the next step of Article 4, Section 3 is that we seek approval from the Congress. And we've already started that process as well. We're in contact with certain members of Congress at this point in time. And we are absolutely being overwhelmed with support. At this point, we're actually getting overwhelming support from the people that we're talking with. And we're finding overwhelming support with the general public when we go out and meet with them. We're getting more and more proactive in that regard. But getting back to the point about the state legislature, we understand the positions they're going to be in because there won't be the money that they thought that there was going to be. And we're here basically not to just help ourselves out and improve our lot as New Californians in the rural area, because that's our focus. We're here to help them too. So we want to make it a win-win situation at the state separation. But the big thing that we're doing is that divide of rural versus urban. And that is the problem with Reynolds versus Sims, because, you know, as I was talking about before, you had that situation with one senator representing 11 counties. There's no representation. We bring that all back. We return that because in our state formation process, we're following in the historical footsteps of three other states who did this before. It's only been tried three times. And the last time was with West Virginia at the time of the Civil War. And in the West Virginia situation, they followed the other models that they saw, and they got together with their own people in their own counties. Counties did the work. And the committees in the counties did all the work with the legislature. They were the ones meeting with the legislatures. But in the case of West Virginia, it was a very unique case. There was a great deal of obviously animosity being you know, civil war was at hand. In fact, there was a lot of bloodletting in Virginia, in West Virginia at the time when all this was happening, actually. But the West Virginians did not want to become part of the plantation mentality of the South. So they did not want to secede from the Union as Virginia did. And so they were forming their own state, built more in the reflection of Ohio and in Pennsylvania. And so when they came to the point where they were going to actually declare the separation and work with the legislature, Virginia pulled away and became part of the South, leaving them high and dry. So they met and they said, what are we going to do about this? They went to the Congress and the Congress said, no, you can't be a state or you can't approach us until you satisfy Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution. You have to work with the state legislature. And so what happened was one of the guys stood up and said, Pierpont was his name, he raised his hand and said, I'll be the governor of the restored government of Virginia. And everybody looked around at him like he's crazy. And he says, no, I'll do that. And you can be a lieutenant governor and a secretary. So they put together a makeshift government, and they called it the Restored Government of Virginia. They appealed to the Congress, and the Congress let them in. And so it was at that point that West Virginia went to the Restored Government of Virginia, and they got the authority. They got a resolution passed that allowed them to go on to the Congress. So that was in 1861, 62. By 1863, the Congress had granted them statehood. Now, we are in the exact same situation in California. There is so much tension. We don't know what's going to happen with the economy. There's civil unrest brewing. You know, we have the sanctuary state thing going on. And one of the arguments that we make there's three major arguments that we make for statehood in New California. One, and that this all hinges on Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, that's the guarantee clause, that one, we are not being given a representative government. In other words, a Republican form of government. That's exactly what it states.
So there's some kind of, you know, you mentioned tyranny earlier. So this is kind of the tyranny of the majority being enforced on everyone?
Right.
Of
the minority, actually. It's the legislators and those leaders that are foisting the tyranny upon us. And they're using a system that doesn't have a Republican form of government. See, the United States and California, all the states, are not democracies. We hear the term democracy being used all the time, but a democracy is a dictatorship. So when they broke down the little federal model and we got Reynolds versus Sims and the senators all became representatives, literally, of people, just like the assembly members, then you pulled all that power together for the people and not for the resources. So that's a tyranny, and that's a democracy. You lost the power of the representation of the counties, and you gave the representatives, the people, more power. And the Founding Fathers did not want that. They understood what a tyranny was, and that if you had all your power concentrated in a centralized area, then all the people in the rural areas, all the people with the natural resources, and all the natural resources would soon come under the power of just the people. I mean, one man can't represent 11 counties properly for the resources. That's a fact. So this is what we have now, is that tyranny that's here, and they're passing laws that are very egregious. They're not guaranteeing our safety in public here in California any longer. We're certainly not free from invasion. I mean, when the government of California openly induces and offers enticements for people to come swarming across our borders, that's not protecting us from invasion, which is the second guarantee in the guarantee clause. The third one is to keep us free from civil unrest and freedom from violence. And those are the three elements. And right now, that's not happening. You can ask Kate Steinle's family if that's happening. If you take a look at the sanctuary state status, it's not constitutional by any stretch of the imagination. And this government has been warned by the current president and the current executive about violations of Article 6, which is the supremacy clause. So those are the three elements that we're arguing, is that we are not being guaranteed a Republican form of government, we're not being guaranteed freedom from invasion, and we're not being guaranteed against domestic violence. So all those are blown up, and that's where we're coming from. Now, how are we going to get that back? We're going to be the first state since West Virginia to follow the model into statehood. And we're following pretty much their model. In fact, we've had a Declaration of Independence. We declared our independence on January 15th, 2018, which is exactly what we should be doing. All the states, all the countries around the new world that declared their independence did that first before they became a nation or a state. Then the other part of it is we are in the process of not only following that model, we know we're going to get there because, and this is the hook for Reynolds versus Sims, the last to come into this union by territory was Hawaii. That was 1959, predating Reynolds versus Sims. We are coming in post-dating Reynolds versus Sims, and what we have done already is we, to set up our own government, we have asked our county chairman to assign, to select and elect a senator for each county. So we've already got our senators in place, and we've got two assembly members as a startup for a government. And we're going to challenge Reynolds versus Sims because we believe that we have a 10th Amendment right which supersedes that decision to have representation the way we deem it to be effective for our state.
It's very interesting. So the big question in my mind at this point is, how can you be sure that what you're doing is actually representing the will of the Californians that are living in all these rural counties that are looking to form this new state?
Well, we'll be right back. Kind of an interesting situation, isn't it, with, get the sound up here. Interesting situation going on with this particular aspect, this article, if you will, that we've got going on New California. And, of course, Epoch Times doing a great job of projecting us out there, and we really do appreciate it.
Really, that's a timing issue, actually. I think 5 years ago, people would be scoffing and laughing at this. And, of course, I was with other organizations at the time because we had this vision. We could see that forming a state and setting up new borders and joining the union, becoming an additional state in the union of 50, now becoming 51, would strengthen the whole unity of these 50 other states and our own. And in a time of the globalist, and the globalists want to dissolve boundaries, especially California borders, it's pretty well known. This wasn't really featured years ago. And now, all of a sudden, people are understanding there are these globalists who have these ill intent for our country. And it's actually working. And you can see that working going effect with jobs leaving our country. The president has brought a lot of that back now. But the destabilization of our borders, which is where we're at right now, is a big part.
It's a values thing, basically, right? It's people seeing a different vision for the future of
right.
the state, of the country. But how is it, you said it's a timing issue. How is it that all of these, the new representatives, how are they and you connecting with the people?
Well, and that's the big quest that we're on right now. When we first started New California and how we went about it, we asked counties to commit by signing documents and so on. We asked the representatives to, as county chair, and then become senators. We're doing that outreach right now. This is where we're going to start. Really, we've been doing a lot of it, but we're doing more of it now. We've got the counties. I don't think we're going to grow anymore by beyond the 52 whole or part of the counties. Now, keep this in mind. L.A. County is part of New California, the rural area of L.A. County, which is the northern tier, Assembly Districts 36 and 38. And the reason is it's rural. And so you can propose any border you want. So all the rural areas that are of California, which is about 85% of the land mass, you'll have about 18 million people versus 21 million people in the L.A. Basin, San Francisco, and Sacramento. We have population parity. But it's that population of people, the 18 million, that we're appealing to. And so far, we've gotten, any place we go, we have gotten massive outreach and support success. I mean, it's just when they hear about it. You know, we've been kind of keeping it low right now because we're building and we're getting...
Basically, you've built the infrastructure
right.
for all of this to basically come into place, and now you're working to let people know that this is even a possibility, because I suspect most folks, this is just not even in their realm of conception, right?
Well, you know, it's what we're getting now. We got laughed at, scoffed at. No one's doing that now. No. People are going, come here and tell us more. We want to know more. And it's resonating. And it's a timing issue. And we knew it would be a timing issue. We planned it years in advance to be here right now at this point in time. And we're here. And it's working.
Because things have kind of gotten to that point where something may turn around or something may change.
Right. Well, people, I think, sense that, what we just witnessed with the president, and I never thought we'd ever see something like that. And I was around when Kennedy was assassinated, and everybody said that was a coup. It was an attempted power play, and time and history are showing that. But really, right in front of our faces, we have seen really the first ever coup d'etat attempt on a sitting president. Actually, wasn't even seated to be when the whole thing started, as we're finding out. I mean, this is just outrageous times.
So you're talking about, you know, Spygate, Russia collusion,
all that stuff. And one of the things that I do a radio show called Agenda 21 Radio, and I've been doing this for years as a result of my interpretation of events and seeing these kind of things starting to move forward, the rise of the totalitarians, the globalists, and things like that. And now they've risen, and now they're being confronted. And as with all totalitarians, and I'm sure you understand this, they overplay their hands. And you've seen them overplay their hands, I think, with President Obama, and then the as things moved on and progressed. That's why I say we could see this coming. It's pretty obvious if you looked at the Cold War situation or lived through all that. It was going to happen here. It was bound to, and it has happened. And now the tide has turned. But the whole Spygate thing, as it's being known now, was clearly a real official coup d'etat. And so
attempt.
But see, that's played into what's happening in California and the other states, because people are waking up to this whole thing. Like, wait a minute. Why back in the 60s did they come up with Reynolds versus Sim to concentrate all the powers in the states, centralized government, which, of course, we all know, though it happens with centralized government, it never works. Today, autonomous counties, which is the root of all liberty and freedom in the United States, is really where it's at. So the rural areas, their balance of power was taken away, and this we got the power that was sucked in. So that's why we're doing what we're doing with rural versus urban, and that's the core essence of what we're doing. So we have all these counties. We're doing the outreach right now. We've had three constitutional conventions. We passed numerous resolutions, and the resolutions that we passed, one of the first ones we passed was to accept the Declaration of Independence that we put out. The next one was to put God in the preamble, and then we came up with a third resolution. This was in the second constitutional convention, to cover our bases. Because if there is an insurrection, and if the president has to sign the Insurrection Act, and there is an actual insurrection, we put out already a resolution and mailed it to him, letting him know that we would form a restored California government, just like there would be if something happened to the California government. And then we passed additional resolutions that we actually have presented to the president, and those resolutions are freedom from, or to guarantee that he has to guarantee. The president of the United States, he swears an oath, and the president has to guarantee. And this is what people don't understand, I think, about the president and the border and all this stuff. He has sworn an oath that he has to protect the borders. That's his job. And that's the second thing it says in that guarantee clause. Not only does he have to guarantee a Republican form of government, which many states don't have right now, but he has to guarantee us freedom from invasion and then domestic violence. And that's his job. That's his responsibility. So we passed three resolutions requesting that he do that. And we sent those to him, and he's got possession of them today.
One last question. Why is it so important to you to put God back in the preamble?
Well, the founders were godly people, and they were Christian faith, and they were Protestants. Most of them were Protestants. And as you take a look at the Declaration of Independence, there were 56 founders who wrote the Declaration, who were part of it. And certainly Thomas Jefferson gets a lot of plaudits, but 56 of the founders, 54 were Protestants, and one was a Catholic and one was a Jew. And when we did that, we thought, wait a minute, you know, a lot of people don't understand that through every constitution in every one of the 50 states, they mention God in the very first part of their constitution, in the preamble. So we're doing the same thing. We're being consistent. We want to follow in the footsteps of the other founders of all the other states and also our founding fathers, because we look at the world that they created with their faith and look at the United States of America, what it's been. And it's all been attacked. Right now, I used to be in education. I was an educator for 41 years, custodian to superintendent. And I saw the wiping out of constitutional concepts in the education systems to where our constitution, that's another part of our education system, is a failing system, and people don't understand how the constitution works and why it should work. So that was a very important element to put that in there. The other resolutions, of course, passed without any problem, but the God mention, it was a very, very important one for all of us, because I think we need to go back to that. And we need to go back to our roots and our heritage as a nation, because it's worked very, very well. It's the only model for freedom and liberty that's out there, and we have to keep it healthy. And to keep it healthy means that we're going to grow a new state and add to the states that are already in this union of 50. We'll be the 51st state, New California.
Paul Preston, I'm very excited to learn what comes next with your movement.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that was of course Ian, and I cannot say his last name very well. It's a struggle. He's Polish. Quite an interesting fellow, though. You know, it's interesting to do that whole interview and to get the word out, you know, about New California. And what an opportunity for us to be able to have that opportunity to, you know, and many, many thanks for those people at Epoch Times who helped to get us there. And it was really a wonderful thing. So we have the message out now about New California and about what we're doing in a very big way, and people are responding to it. So keep on responding. Keep on contacting us. And those of you that are interested in signing up with New California, you can go to Sign Up Genie, which is on our website, which is newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. Okay, we got a lot of things going on, though. Some of the things that are going on right now, you've got the Oroville Dam situation going on. We've got a few things to say about that right now, so we'll get into that. Elevation of the dam is 873 feet. The spillway is virtually shut down, the main spillway. They have a lot of problems on the spillway, and we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, one of the things that was a precursor, if you will, to what happened on the spillway was the fact that there were a lot of cracks on the spillway. And I'm going to play for you an article that was done so that you understand where I'm coming from and how things have been going about earthquakes. And this report came out last year, about a year ago, about the Oroville Dam. And it's CBS affiliate Channel 13 out of Sacramento that has put this together. And I want to play it for you so you get some perspective on what we're talking about with cracks.
Well, to a surprising new theory behind earthquakes at the nation's tallest dam, a spillway failure led to mass evacuations last year at the Oroville Dam. We all remember that. But in addition to those cracks, did you know that scientists were also investigating a seismic mystery? What caused nearly 20,000 earthquakes at the spillway? Maria Medina is getting answers this morning.
As the main spillway at Oroville Dam failed last February.
That's what we see at these different stations. These are the
scientists at the USGS were focused on something also happening at the dam that couldn't be heard or seen.
And we were wondering what's going on.
Two earthquakes, a 1.0 magnitude tremor and a 0.8. Researchers like Ola Kovin began taking a closer look.
And found close to 20,000 of these tiny events, more or less in the same location.
Coffin says they discovered since 1993 there were thousands of small, shallow earthquakes at the dam. The big questions, what was causing them? Could it be the dam itself, and could the quakes be behind the spillway failure?
What we ended up finding is that all of these 20,000 events coincided with use of the spillway.
Researchers found more than 99% of the quakes happened when the spillway was in use. The strongest tremors occurred when the emergency spillway was open during the failure. And massive amounts of water were released. So what caused the quakes?
That the most likely culprit is that water actually gets under the spillway into cracks in the bedrock, and these cracks open and close, and they generate these seismic signals.
Hey, folks.
Well, they generate seismic signals. Now, in other words, what happens is these so-called seismic signals are sound waves. And this is a very, very interesting thing. And they think that this is the reason why they have some of these leaks is because of these cracks that have been formed. Very important cracks that have been formed. And they're known as harmonic vibrations. Low-frequency noise. Low-frequency noise. Now, low-frequency noise is kind of interesting, and it's a phenomenon. A lot of some people just kind of poo-poo and hush-hush, and they don't think it has any kind of side effects. Now, I'll give you an example of a low-frequency noise that really strikes to you, and you can feel the vibrations, is when you pull up next, a car pulls up to you, and he's got his bass on, boom, 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 boom. You can't hear the words. You don't know what's going on. But you can hear the boom, 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 the thump, 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 thump. That's an example of a low-frequency noise, or LFN. So, LFNs caused by the water going over the spillway, causing lift on the spillway. And what happens is that water rushes in through the cracks under the spillway, through the cracks in the soil. Because you remember, the soil content underneath the spillway is a very loose affair. It's not real. It's bedrock, they say, but it's a very, in terms of bedrock, it's a very, very crunchy type, if you will, and very prone to cracking and fracturing. And so water leaches through it. This is the core as to why this whole thing happened, as to why you had the situation where the water was pushing pressure. Because what happens when the water is coming over the spillway itself, it creates that rise. And not only that, but the water comes down at an irregular pattern in more mass in some places than others. And so what it does is it creates a wave-like frequency as water drifts down from the spillway, and it can be measured. So in other words, when the water comes down the first part of the chute, when it comes down the first part of the chute, what it does is it goes over the edge, almost like you're on a ski run. You go down a little bit of a straightaway, and all of a sudden, boom, it drops down. Now you got to get into it, you got to curve and go back and forth and back and forth. Here I am, I'm skiing in my house. And, you know, that's what happens, though, is that you, if you're skiing and you go over that lip, and, you know, you go down, like up at the Mammoth Mountain, used to go up the Cornice, Huevos Grande, and all that stuff. You go up over the lip, boom, you go down. Well, when you go down, water is thrown out and then hits the deck in front, just like you do. And it creates a signal, a thump. And then it goes further down the water itself. It goes further down. It makes an impact further down on the spillway. It makes another thump, a less louder thump. And then you go thump, thump, thump all the way down. And it creates that thump, 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 low-frequency noise. It creates a noise vibration. And when you create that noise vibration, what you're doing, of course, is, well, causing pressure on the spillway deck to go down. At the same time, when it doesn't hit that thump and you've got that trough, it's causing the spillway to lift. So you get a lift and down, and it starts to act like a pump. And the spillway deck itself is pumping in and out and in and out and in and out and forcing water to come up through the cracks in the rocks. And then soon, what you had, like in the case of the Oroville Dam situation, with the plates breaking out, the plates ultimately gave way and broke out. Now, that's a fact. We know that. No one could figure out what that was about. But now, all of a sudden, we find out there's earthquakes. The earthquakes have been when? Only when the spillways open. And, of course, what are the seismographs picking up? They're picking up the thumps of the low-frequency noise. Up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And this is a siphoning effect of water through the back of the spillway through the cracks in the rocks. Now, here's a problem, and it was pointed out 2 years ago by people like Dr. B, Robert B. from Berkeley, one of the top people in his field. He pointed out that, you know, you got these problems, we got leaks, you got big leaks. This isn't something where a leak is a leak, you don't understand. But a leak is just porting. Oh, it's porting and then it's piping on through. But they don't understand there's a siphoning effect. In that siphoning effect, in the first go-around, when there was damage to the first spillway, opened up big cracks in the hillside that that spillway was on, making it vulnerable for water to drain right on through. And it was draining and draining and draining, but you know what? And then you put a brand new spillway on there, and now you got the pumping effect from the thump, 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 right? And of course, the low-frequency noise was picked up by devices on the spillway. They actually put those on there. And after several days of driving water over that spillway, they said, you know what? We got a problem, Houston. We've got a problem. Because, you know, when you allow water in such mass, with such velocity to run down the spillway, you get thump, 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 which is sometimes referred to as cavitation. And it hits that deck and then bounces up and creates that suction, all happening at one time in mass. Well, you know what it does? I mean, you can't resist that. Well, that water is unstoppable. This is the thing a lot of people don't understand. Unless you go there, you see it. You see how monstrous this is. This is not a small proposition. There's no room for error. So what has happened? The deck is, well, almost pulverized, I guess you'd say. Some people would. It's leaking in the seams of the deck because it's all a whole intricate layout of a checkerboard, if you will, put together as slabs and plates. And they're quite thick. Everybody says, oh, you don't, hey, we got 7 feet thick. No mind. No, never mind. Really. Listen, I got to tell you, I don't care how thick the concrete is. When you put water over it at such velocity and so much, it'll take anything down, anything, including a brand new spillway. And I think that's what we have, because right now when you take a look at the spillway, it's leaking like a sieve through those plates, like a sieve, just on its own without any thump, 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 without any low-frequency noise, if you know what I mean. And by the way, where is the most damage that's indicated at that dam? Right when you make the big dive down. Because you see what happens is as that water is pounding on the bottom deck, it's lifting up and then it's pressing down and lifting up and pressing down. And where is the pressure point where that's going to go highest? To the top of that curve. And where's the most buckling that's prevalent? At the top of the curve. Anyway, we're running out of time right now. I know that this has been kind of interesting and fascinating, but you know what? That is exactly what we have going on right now at the dam. It's very dangerous. And what have they done? Well, we understand they may have hired a brand new engineering firm, which is interesting news now, isn't it? And they've been trying to fix it at night so no one sees them. Whatever that fix might be, I hope they're not trying to grout it. It's almost like putting a piece of gum into a dam. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com, a21r.com, and, of course, newcaliforniastate.com. And stay strong, America. Stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.